space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Get on!
And this episode, we're finally talking about what you leave behind, the finale of Deep Space Nine.
I mean, it feels like we've already done this one, haven't we? I know we say that sometimes, but it really does with this one.
It's a bit of deja vu.
I am going to put my hand up that I may be slightly responsible for why we are having to do this again.
It's not entirely down to you, but it's kind of at the end of the day, we didn't really work out how we were going to position the cameras and how it was all going to work.
Who's not aware, we already did this once live at the Sci-Fi Weekender, and thank you to everyone who turned up to watch us. We did try out all our tech for the show that we did later in the week, which we will be talking about next week on the podcast, so join us for that. We got a bit carried away. We put in lots of clips and sounds
And videos.
And also the cameras. We didn't really have enough cameras sort of set up for us on stage, really.
That wasn't a major problem.
We wouldn't have had coverage for that, really.
We did get heavily copyright struck by you.
I'll
put it out there now. If people would like to see one of the reasons we got copyright struck, and I think it's a pretty cool video that I put together.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I actually think Leroy snuck in and watched us. It was a bit pissed at my mixing, so he had a word with YouTube about us.
It's quite possible.
But if anyone would like to see my remix of the Fire Cave Start Fight, I will put that on our Facebook group. I won't put it on YouTube.
Just before we do move on, I just want to do a quick thanks. Unfortunately, I'll get into it, but we did do it live on stage, and it was the Behind the Sofa kind of slot. And I just want to thank Richard Angwin, who's Fi Angwin, our dear friend who passed away. He gave us the sofa, which the slot was named after, as well as the quark puppet to use. Sofa's gone back to him, and he very kindly has let me keep the quark puppet. He isn't here right now because someone else very kindly took it back, and I need to get it from them because I wanted to make sure it didn't get ruined or anything on the train. I was even scared to put the puppet on because it was like felt like hallowed ground. But right in the front of the stage for the whole thing was the sofa the slot was named for. So I just want to thank him and give props, and just thank you so much for Quark, who will be in the background. Found in future episodes,
and we will talk more about when Trek goes wrong at the movies next week because we've got some guests which we will tell you about later in the episode.
I just want to give a shout out right away, but thank you.
Absolutely,
that's cool. Absolutely.
So, what you leave behind then is the finale of Deep Space Nine, the finale of the Dominion War, and we're gonna talk about it in a bit more of a relaxed setting than what we did last time. We were in a pub. We may have had a few drinks. It may not have been our finest work.
Well, what I'm going to say though is it'll be really interesting to see because we got through in about 45 minutes, but I think we did cover everything really. But it's like it'll be interesting because I think there was an element of the fact it was live and everything was a bit different, but. Like, I think part of the reason is it's just so good, though. It's like when it's bad or it's mediocre or whatever, there's stuff to pick apart in it. This is just so damn good. It's just like, that bit was great. That bit was great. And did you see that bit? Like, so I've tried to sort of watch it and pick more things out this time or different things. But yeah, it's
like, I can only think of one or two things that if you're being picky, that you'd pick apart in the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get that.
It is a bloody good episode.
It is. And that's one of them.
I can't imagine what we're going to pick about. That's all.
I'll put this out at the start then, and we'll answer it individually at the end. Ooh. Is this as good a finale? Is it worse? Is it better than All Good Things for TNG?
Better.
So think about that.
It's a no-brainer.
Okay.
I mean, for me, it's no-brainer different. Like, because
this is a much better ending because it actually wraps up the entire series. But Picard corrected that in season 3 and wrapped up TNG properly.
I mean, I would argue that for the Next Generation, All Good Things was a perfect wrap-up to the end of the whole saga, because they had the films afterwards, like the TV show is what I mean. It was a perfect wrap-up. But I think what that does is a self-contained ending, whereas this is the end of a 13-part, like it had 10-part, however many parts it is for this kind of like huge arc. So I would say it kind of like, it's got so much else which leads into this. So like, I admire that
the difference.
It stands on its own feet. So to me, it's different, but I love them both.
If we're talking about which is the better ending, this is the better ending because it does wrap up the whole story of DS9 nicely. All Good Things, when the episode ends, it's the end of an episode and the story's continuing. Nothing's really changed.
I mean, I'd say that kind of like it bookends the kind of trial. It kind of like ends.
It
opens Picard up in that way. Like, so it is something's different. Whereas like through most of it, even though there's small changes from season 1 to series 7, like TV at that time was all about like at the end of the episode, you're the same person at the beginning. Whereas it allowed Picard to be different at the end. So it's different, but
It's a standalone, like a casual fan who's dipped in and out of TNG over the years could watch All Good Things, get everything they need from it and enjoy it.
Another episode of TNG and not notice that they just watched the end of TNG.
Oh, no, I'd argue you know that's the end. No, I would argue
someone... If someone had just dipped in and out of Deep Space Nine and, let's say, had missed the first 8 episodes of this arc, they would be completely cut off. So it is a totally different thing. I would say this is better than All Good Things, but that's because I'm so invested in Deep Space Nine. So I think All Good Things has its merits, as you say, Squee, as a standalone thing.
I'm not knocking All Good Things as an episode.
No. Just said you are.
The question was, which is the better ending? And definitively,
and you gave your view. I gave mine. That's all. No one's knocking what you said saying that you said that. I mean, the only thing I would say is my Netflix. Like, this is because I also did a rewatch of all Deep Space Nine, which finished last year. My Netflix is starting to say, it's like, are you watching this again? Like, even I'm like, I could say it by heart. Like, that's Netflix talking to me now. So, like, if I watch it again, I think it's going to block me from the episode for a few months.
Well, it's because they're trying to put you off watching it, because eventually they'll lose the rights and it'll go to Paramount. You don't really like DS9 that much. You don't need to pay for a rival streaming service.
Interesting thing, I've gone with the Netflix numbering of this, and it's just episode 25.
Yeah,
they only show it as a two-parter, but on TV originally it was 25 and 26.
I think, I mean, on the...
It was broadcast in a two-hour slot, and then it was broken into two for syndication.
Yeah, because I think on the DVD, or like, VHS, of course, back then, was it shown as, like, was it feature length? I think
it was feature length.
So that's how I originally experienced
the VHS is interesting, because I think there was a reversible cover on it, if I remember rightly, and it had, like, an action cover where it was the Defiant, and I believe it was called What You Leave Behind on that, but if you reversed the cover, it fit in with all the other DS9s. And have a feeling on that it was What You Leave Behind parts 1 and 2 for reasons best known to themselves. Anyway.
It's for people who want like all their VHSs at the time to just match.
So the episode starts with our favourite couple, Dax and Bashir. And at least they're not doing the will they won't they. They definitely have. Yeah. And that's quite clear. And they do talk about the spots, which, and apologies to those who were at the live show, but I am going to repeat myself here.
I think we'll just put that out now. We're going to repeat ourselves. We're talking about the same
reason they mention the spots is because that joke about how far down the spots go was first told in the episode Meridian, which is the
first episode.
Of course. Which is the first episode where the Federation decides to ignore the Dominion's decree and explore the Gamma Quadrant. So it is a callback.
Invade.
It is a callback to the start of the war, and I think that's why they've put it in this episode that sees the end of the war. Yeah.
Although I seem to remember in that episode there was something different about Dex, but I mean, watching this episode, of course, if there was something different about Dex or another Dex, for instance, they'd acknowledge.
It was always Ezra.
Yeah, it's always been Ezra.
Ezra's been in it for seven seasons. And there's never been another Dax. We will not acknowledge any other Daxes at all in this episode.
Certainly not worth remembering if you were reminiscing about your time on the station. I mean, Sisko doesn't remember her, even though she was his best friend. Yeah, Worf, who was married to her, doesn't remember. So the cat have been another.
I mean, Worf's an outlier. He doesn't remember his son ever. So, you know, it's like he's very forgetful when people aren't around.
And speaking of people who go unremembered, we get the whole O'Brien family comes back for this episode. Yeah. So we get Keiko, we get Molly, and we get Hiroyoshi, which I think this might only be the second time we've ever seen Hiroyoshi.
Second or third time.
Oh, I got a little fun fact. If you got the fan file, the Star Trek complete file, which they released.
Oh, yes.
And they were kind of like, because Deep Space Nine and Voyager were in production at the time, they were kind of writing on the fly. And they released the details about the O'Brien family before in the series the second kid was born. And I believe they called the baby Sean in that. So they got the name. They obviously at some point they were going to call it something else. Or, you know,
right.
Sean. As I say, I think it was Sean.
Sean would probably be a more Irish name, wouldn't it?
A more Irish name.
Thing, yeah, so
obviously, Molly's an Irish name and decided to go with a Japanese name.
Keiko won the argument on that one, but just not in time to tell the...
I was like, for fuck's sake, they're obviously never going to be able to complete this. Now they're putting wrong facts in that they haven't decided.
It's like when you get novelizations of films and they've written it off about two drafts of the script ago. The novelization of Generations has Kirk dying the original way rather than the bridge falling on him. And I won't spoil
Jaws
it for anyone who's
is, not read it. Jaws is a very different novel.
Well, Jaws was based on the novel, though, whereas...
Right.
Also on Generations, they've got McCoys in there in the Nexus, yeah. And there's like loads of other bits which they can't. Yeah.
So Molly is messing about with the model of the Alamo, and anyone who is a toy collector can empathise with O'Brien in this scene because. Exactly. He quite rightly points out that you do not play with the Alamo toy.
I mean, even if you're not a model maker, you can appreciate all the arguments you had over the years. It was like, it's not a toy, it's an action figure.
Exactly. The Alamo is for display. Wouldn't it be cool, says Facebook user, if Keiko was actually a Section 31 agent, which would explain why she's always disappearing?
That explains it. Sean was Yoshi's Section 31 name because he was in, like, he was born to Section 31.
Also, that would explain why she can be a bit funny about Bashir at times as well. It's nothing to do with Bashir stealing her husband away from her. It's because she knows that he's antagonistic towards Section 31.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be some Keiko Section 31 fan fiction out there that just makes Keiko the coolest character in all of Star Trek, and we've just not been realizing it.
And I think we want to give a salute right here to Rosalind Chow for all these years thanklessly playing this character.
Yeah.
She's written so badly, written always to be a whining, it goes back to that kind of stereotype of the shrewish woman, it was just so unfair on her. She's a great actor, been going since back in MASH she was in as Klinger's, she marries at the end. And yeah, this just completely underserves her. And like, I just want to say, because we always give that character a hard time, but we're always so quick to point out she's a great actor. It's nothing to do with her. It's
she is. Really and if, for. If you want proof of that.
I was following from what Screw was saying. It's one of the rare occasions in DS9 where the character is actually really badly written.
Yeah.
And you see so many characters in DS9 over the 7 years that get so much development mm-hmm. to work on them. And she gets nothing. She's almost like, nope. Right, let's get... O'Brien got married in TNG. Fuck, we've got to have his wife in. Oh, fucking Keiko again.
Yeah, let's send it to Bajor for three seasons.
But it almost feels like that's what they thought at times. Oh, we've got to show her again because it's part of his character.
Yeah.
You just imagine one like Starfleet there going, like, we could write her actually nice and interesting and kind of round. No, we will make her a shrew at every opportunity because she is a woman and women are bad.
It also makes you wonder because... O'Brien is probably the most tortured character ever in Star Trek with the things that happened to him. And if somebody just thought, wouldn't it be funny if his home life also was constant torture?
Well, actually, I think it went the other way around because she was introduced with him pretty, like him becoming O'Brien as opposed to Con or whatever else he was kind of credited as previously. So, like, it was almost like, right, he's got such a miserable home life. Let's just kill him, like kill him, torture him, do everything we can, like outside here as well.
Well, see, again, like talking about how they could have developed the characters, that would have been so much more interesting, seeing how does his wife react to all this horrible stuff that happens to him. But we very rarely, if ever, get that. Yeah, it's a shame. And if you want proof, go on, sorry.
No, just where he's stuck on the planet and they've got that kind of like deadly capsule.
Yes, Armageddon game.
Him and Bashir, because they've got the memory. And she comes up with a coffee thing that he only drinks coffee in the morning, which is
right.
At the end of the episode. But it was a tender moment. She got
it
one.
Was.
She got one tender moment towards him.
And for proof of how good Rosalind Chow can be, check out The Three Body Problem on Netflix, which has just recently dropped at time of recording. Excellent series, and she is absolutely fantastic in it, a million miles away from Keiko, thankfully.
Oh, and also she'll play in Next Generation. She's kick-ass in that. Like, she's playing this really evil character, and she's great.
So talked about the O'Briens, we've had Dax and Bashir, and we carry on like this domestic theme. It's almost like the calm before the storm, that they're showing us the characters in the domestic life sort of one last time before this immense battle. Yeah, and we get Cassidy and Sisko. And obviously there's the talk of, well, the prophets told us something bad would happen and now I'm pregnant. And well, you might be onto something there, Cassidy. You might be onto something, but let's see how it all pans out.
Just to your point of them sort of like, because they bookend this with really domestic life both sides of it, like both they show them together, you know, how they are on the station, and then they show them sort of leaving at the end. And I do think this kind of like form of a really long... Is it 10 parts, the kind of finale?
Yeah.
10 part. Yeah. So these 10 parts do allow... So when you go to your finale, like, it would usually be sacrilege to waste so much shoe leather in a last episode with these domestic scenes, but this really allows it to breathe because
the finale is actually 10 episodes.
Exactly. Yeah. You've done the groundwork, and we'll talk about it a bit when we get to sort of the second half of the episode, because... Arguably, this is an unusually structured finale. It's basically the battle happens at round about the halfway point. The war is more or less done by the halfway point of the episode.
35 minutes, the war is done.
Yeah,
there we go then.
35 minutes to go. I've watched it again this evening.
So not even the full first half of the episode. But the things they do afterwards, they've earned it, and you know, we'll talk about them. Over to the baddies then, the founder, and there's this great scene where the founder's promising the Breen everything, like, don't worry, you'll get Romulus and you can have Earth. Don't worry about it. And Wayoon pipes up and go, well, hang on, I was promised all these things. And the founder says, oh, well, I'm just lying to them to keep them on side. You'll get it all. And Wayoon goes, oh, good. And it never crosses his mind that she's doing exactly the same thing to him.
I'll also throw out there, this is kind of like really interesting, because when they've got the Kardashian kind of side of it, when they have the agreement with the Kardashians to that, like, they're their alpha BFFs, the kind of honeymoon period is a lot shorter with that. Now, I'm aware, of course, this is them in a position of weakness, like for the founders generally. So they're more reliant on the Breen. However, like, there's even comments when the Breen aren't there, when, like, you know, the female founder says, oh, he's a better man than you. He, like I feel he's like there is a weird begrudging respect for the Breen.
He's a braver man.
Braver man, yeah. But it's like, it's kind of weird. It's interesting is all, you know, it's like, I don't think ever got given that respect. And maybe she does know, like, somehow in this position of weakness, even though they think they're superior to everyone, I think she kind of hands it to the Breen kind of in a weird way. I think she'd still sell them out in a heartbeat, but you know what I mean?
She does seem more in awe of the Breen than she was certainly by the Cardassians.
Yeah, and it's almost like the Breen, I know we don't hear what they're saying, but it's like, it feels like they, they've got more of like a, right, we're strong kind of attitude, whereas the Kardashians are always kind of capitulating to the founders, where I feel like the Breen just stand a little taller somehow for some reason.
Well, they are very tall, but I don't know. I mean, maybe the... It wouldn't surprise me if the founder was planning on just wiping the Breen out as soon as the war's done.
I don't believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like, what she says to YU when she goes, I would promise the Breen the Alpha Quadrant if it would help win this war. But they've probably done that loads of times in the past.
Oh, yeah.
In the history that she has, because they have, like, they admittedly have no respect for solids. So she's off track. If she thinks saying this to the Breen will make them fight and win the war, she's going to say it, and straight afterwards, she'll just turn the Jem'Hadar on them.
Oh, yeah, she will still do that. I still firmly believe she would do that, but it's kind of weird. It's like there's times when they're not there and she still pays the compliment, which she never did for the Kardashians.
And it's almost like she appreciates their tactical know-how, because she said, I've come to rely on you. And
I think it's weird because it's almost like we can put whatever we want in the Breen because we don't hear them talk. But I feel like they are more stoked. They're less ego-driven than the Kardashians. And I think she's got no time for that kind of ego, which they've got when she they're superior to
everyone.
And
the Kardashians are also very backhanded. We've seen it with the Obsidian Order. There's very conniving and we're doing this for our own benefit, where the Breen is sort of like, right, war, let's do it. This is how we win.
Yeah,
and that's the thing, we never find out really what the Breen's motivation for joining this is, or what deal was struck, or it's interesting.
The Breen are one of those races that, let's hope we get legacy, that keeps us in, let's call this the present, which Picard was saying, so we can explore the Breen more and see why.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of the Breen.
Because there's nothing that explains what their actual motivation was for joining in the war against everyone else in the Alpha and Beta Quadrant.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're left to assume it's kind of like basically the same kind of thing as the Kardashians. They think it's the
decided.
Like, no matter what kind of the money for the deal is, you know.
But we were given time to get to know the Kardashians before that, though, and learn a bit about how they were, where the Breen have just appeared.
Yeah.
So, on the surface of Cardassia, then, I love how we're getting this thing that Damar is becoming like a folk hero, almost like a myth. Like, he's been, the populace have been told he's dead, but everybody's talking about, oh, have you heard Legate Damar's actually alive? And then
my second cousin twice removed saw him at a speech.
Yeah. It's great. And that was exactly what they wanted to do, was to sort of build this thing.
And this mountain lair they bring up in, I think it's the episode before this. It's great.
Yeah. Well,
I was saving it.
And it leads to Kira doing her best Princess Leia impression by dressing up in the Breen costume, which is basically the Princess Leia bounty hunter costume. And saving Garak and Damar there.
Oh, yeah. The dumbest thing. This is the dumbest move, though. It's like, great. Okay, we're going to go and storm the path. Are we going to bring, of course, like, you know, if we're going to get in, we're going to, of course, bring people they don't know. Well, and Damar, of course, the most famous fugitive to the Founders at this time. Of course, we're going to bring him right to the doors.
Well, you know, we're in the end game now. You've got to be quite direct in what you're doing.
Have we had the bit where we've got them in their sort of like underground bunker with Mila?
No, we're not there yet.
No, we're not.
No, not quite yet.
No, we've just had Kira being Leia.
I thought that was afterwards, just checking.
Then we get all this. O'Brien's going to tell Bashir that he's leaving, but O'Brien thinks he's telling him about the Alamo.
This is forced dialogue. I hate forced dialogue. It's when Bashir, when they're talking about it, and you know why O'Brien's saying everything he's going, it's like, oh, well, someone means selling you. It's like, I know, but it's a big decision. And Bashir's talking about moving the Alamo, and he's saying it's a big decision. It's like, no, it's not. It's just moving to your quarters. That's not a big decision. Yeah. Like, I know we care about models and everything, but it's like, you would never word it like that. There was like, it just annoys me when it's like, it just isn't how it would work.
It's very contrived.
Very contrived, is this conversation, which is a shame, because we've all said it. These guys have one of the best romances on TV that's ever been done. And in the final episode, you have a contrived speech that feels forced.
Yeah, it's a shame. It doesn't feel emotionally truthful, because much of O'Brien and Bashir does.
We don't need a clumsy misunderstanding.
It's not like they dropped the ball in the final episode of these two, and they've absolutely knocked out the field for some reason.
Yeah, I don't think it ultimately does it any harm, but yeah, it could have been tighter in this episode, certainly.
As opposed to a contrived conversation, I would just love to have said it and just like, just maybe a moment of silence, a moment like, oh shit, like I'm losing my best friend. And then they just continue as they did.
Yeah,
just having like real moment between these two men, like you've had throughout the whole series. Don't do this bullshit. Like they love this contrived thing. It's like they say, did the same thing with
Dax and Worf,
and Dax and Bashir.
Just
stop it. You don't need it.
So Sisko gets his visitation from the prophets then, and I love the way Odo goes up to him and goes, "What's the matter, Captain?" He just goes, "Prophets." this idea that it's just that common now that Sisko has one of these visions that you don't need prophets to say anymore. Just, it's just prophets. Don't worry, it'll wear off in a minute.
Good or bad, who knows?
Is this the one where they say that line I asked you to?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Sarah says to Sisko, your journey's end lies behind you, not in front of you.
Now, like, this is one of these moments, and I've enjoyed all three of these moments, like archetypes of moment, if you will, on Retrek. Either you guys are going to go, yeah, we knew that. It's going to be like, wow, that's like, I never thought of it that way. Or it's like, oh, yeah, or you disagree. So let's see. But it's like, I've listened to, like, I heard this line. I was like, well, what does that actually mean? Like, I was trying to pick out different bits that we talked about on the show. I was like, what does that actually mean by that? And to me, I think this is kind of sort of a callback, kind of to Emissary and to the whole journey of it. Because, like, the way, like, the whole thing he says in the first episode is it's not linear. Like, I need to live my life linearly. And in this episode, spoilers, effectively, Sisko dies in a corporeal form and becomes one of the prophets. I think it's saying, so like, once you've done this, you will not exist in the present. You will be existing in every moment of your life, like we've always told you that we do. And I never really thought about it that way. I don't know. Like, have you ever, has that ever occurred to you?
I've not thought of this line of dialogue specifically, but I can accept that reading. Yeah, I think
I can see where you're getting it from. Like, I always read this as that this battle is like is heading to Cardassia, and she's telling him that this the final battle is not where you're going, it's behind you, which is Bayshore.
But yeah, I think that's what I think on a literal level, that's what she's getting at. He's saying, you know, it,
yeah,
ultimately,
you're heading to this war, you're heading to this battle, and in a way, her saying your battle is behind you, which I've always interpreted as being Bayshore,
yeah,
back at the station Bayshore, is also letting him know that you've got more to come after this battle,
exactly. So
You're not dying here. There's more to come.
But actually, yeah. I wonder if they talk about those kind of like literal.
I think probably, whenever
there's probably a bit of both. If you actually went into,
I think so. I think whenever you've got the prophets,
now, the prophets now have been non-linear. You've got a bit of literal, and you've also got a bit of them going timey-wimey.
Yeah, whenever the prophets are using language that could be construed to refer to the passage of time, or, you know, there's always going to be extra layers to it, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, I don't mean this braggadociously, but I've interviewed some people both from this show and from different kind of programs. And sometimes when you say this stuff to them, they either go, it's like, Yeah, we really wanted to have that multi-layer. It's really good. And a few times they're going, oh, actually, no, yeah, we never thought about that. That's really good. It's like, oh, you know, it's really funny because sometimes they have thought about this. And sometimes we've just watched it so many times, we're looking for.
And that's the beauty of that. Like, if it's there, it's there. It doesn't matter whether they intended it or not.
The reality is that we probably know these shows better than the people who are on them because we've watched them that many times. Because we dig into them. They just got a script and they went to work and got paid for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes, especially with Next Generation, I believe, I think the pace might have slowed a little by Deep Space Nine, but still there. And they've said, well, probably, but anyway, it's like I've heard them talk on Next Generation about Next Generation saying it's like sometimes we just had so much to like put out there. Like Brent Spiner said about kind of having to, he goes, look, I just want to get some performance in there. Like, I didn't have time to worry that it was the right or wrong performance, like you would want to do.
Yeah.
I had to put some characterization on it. And I think it's the same thing with Brian. It's like sometimes they just had to produce an episode and they put a line they might just literally meant was on the surface, but probably watching back, they're like, oh, actually, that does kind of work on this level as well.
If you look at TV now, we might get 10 episodes every 2 years of a series. Yeah. Where here they were putting out 26 episodes a year.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hell of a leg.
So you're busy learning the script for probably 3 episodes in the future while you're at, well, the first and second one you're busy acting on. and it's probably acting on multiple episodes at the same time sometimes because they've got a set and they're going, right, line here, line here, line here, bang, 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 done.
And the turnaround time for an episode at the time, I believe, was 7 days.
Yeah.
So in terms of screen time, you're shooting the equivalent of an hour and a half film every 2 weeks, which is insane when you consider how long a film's production is. You know, it's,
And from such a pace, we get Masks and Osaka.
Of course.
We're not there yet, but when we get to all the spaceships, there are huge, huge budget sci-fi movies still today that would dream of doing what this did on a 2-week turnaround TV show.
Without question. So Dukat comes back on Bajor.
Yes.
And we get a little bit from...
Cat.
Yes. An interesting thing from Kai Winn that she's like, she was playing it all cool last time she saw him, like the power raids have banished you because you weren't worthy to look on the book. How dare you? And then when he comes back, it's like, oh, actually, I've been waiting for you. So he's almost like in this weird, twisted relationship. She kind of wants to be really naughty, but she needs... She needs someone to enable her to do that, and that's what the cat is. She can't just go off and be evil on her own.
She needs an enabler.
Yeah. And I find, I mean, their whole relationship dynamic's interesting. I find that very sort of telling that she wasn't willing to go off and be evil without
on her own,
without him getting there. Yeah.
Well, we'll get there as well. And it's like when he is defeated, or you know, when it, like when he's basically turned on her. First thing she does is go back towards the emissary. It's like she is such a turncoat. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. She's, yeah, she's all about the power, as is he, but
she hasn't got the ambition to grab the power herself.
Yeah, and she's not as out and out evil. Like, yeah, she's not a nice person, but
she's been a nasty person to become the Kai.
Yeah.
She's sort of pushed her limits to be nasty.
Yeah, that's it.
But Descartes is out and out evil. Yeah. He can enable her to be evil with him.
It's kind of funny because it's, even though I don't want to insult her as an actor, that of course all actors give, like she gives a different performance to anything else she's done, I'm sure, in Kai Winn and the stuff she gets to do here. But there is certainly like an element of if Nurse Ratched was in this situation, she might be this person. It's like it's kind of a weird thing of like if you picture Nurse Ratched older, she could have become this person.
Yeah, she could have. That's a good question. Who's nicer, Kai Winn or Nurse Ratched? I think
Nurse Ratched thinks she's the good guy in the way Kai Winn thinks she's
I'm sure she does, yeah. So the question becomes, what would have happened if Gul Dukat had have met Nurse Ratched?
I don't think it would necessarily be much different. I think it would be pretty much this. It's like, yes, if you think about it, like nursing and being in religion, are kind of the same idea of like you think
Set out with all the best intentions.
And you're on the side of good in that role is designed to be on the side of good.
Yeah,
yeah. That someone corrupt can do wrong things with it.
You enter either profession with the aim of being good. You might get... Like, if you become a Catholic, you're probably going to get influenced by little boys.
I'll leave you to that one.
Allegedly. That's
I'm
not
in
allegedly,
every sense
it,
not touching that one.
No, it's not allegedly anymore.
In every sense, I'm not touching that one.
Yes. But point taken. So, moving on. Quack and Vic are playing Go Fish, which is quite a cute scene to get. Yeah. Because these two guys, we can't shoehorn them into the battle. Like, you know, they have to stay on the station.
I think this is a nice scene because you've got Quark is bored because he's got no customers because obviously everyone's off fighting a war. And you've probably got every civilian has been evacuated to Bajor, so the station will be dead. So you've got him in there, he's gone to the... everyone hangs out in Vic, so I'll go talk to him because I know he's a really clever AI, so he can have a proper conversation with him. But he's stuck playing a game that he's not interested in. That isn't his game.
Who do you reckon, whose account is Quark billing this to? Because there's no way he's just paying for this off his own back the whole I reckon he's going to say, Bashir, you left Vix on last time you went to war. It's not my fault.
No, 24/7.
No, he's still...
You're right, they did.
He's still billing Cisco.
You're right, yeah.
Generation. And they pay their bill by going, that's fine. We're not charging you for the electric.
And I still...
There might be an odd thing where the paperwork isn't completely in order where we turn the blind eye every now and again. You know, there's a little bit of that, you know.
What happens between Quark and the Federation or Cisco, how he's done it, is every now and again, Quark gets too aboard himself and Cisco goes, fine, here's your bill for everything. And then occasionally... Cisco asks for something and it sort of wipes out the bill that he owes. So there's
right from the beginning, Cisco is diving straight into the for all this kind of like very racist Ferengi comments over the years. We've covered it on the show, but for all his comments, straight from the beginning, he he basically blackmails him into staying.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, he admits that he blackmailed him.
But then on another hand, he kind of judges Ferengis for being Ferengi. It's kind of...
Sisko's actually one of the best we see at this stage. How you deal with Ferengis. He deals with them head on, and he bribes them and barters them and blackmails them. And the Ferengis respect that, and he maybe didn't realise what an emissary that's what he was doing. But he earned Quark's respect straight away because he blackmailed him and he battered with him. He goes, "You want this, I want that. This is what it is."
If anything, I think Quark is truer to himself at the beginning than Sisko is. Sisko becomes true to himself, I believe. I think he accepts that side of himself later. But to begin with, he's acting like he's morally superior to Ferengi, whereas he's willing to kind of bend the rules right from day one.
It's probably, if you actually look at things like the Pale Moonlight, etc., with who's morally superior, Quark's probably a lot more morally superior.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When he boils down.
Yeah. So Dukat and Wim get to the fire caves, and this, I'm only going to mention it once, but there is a weird structure to this. The timelines don't add up because we've got Wynn and Dukat going into the fire caves. And from what we see, they're maybe there a couple of hours total. But everything else that we see in the episode, which structurally the episode makes it look like it's taking place concurrently, takes way longer than that.
Right. I am going to put this out here, right? I am going to say the Parwraiths are like the prophets.
Ah.
Anything is timey-wimey.
So anything that happens in the fire caves can happen in the past, present, and future.
It's happening within a little bubble of time.
Well,
waiting for other events to catch up with it. So it's going to be a slow space within a little bubble of time. Because it's timey-wimey, and they're using space magic.
And this is the benefit of us doing this episode twice, because you've had a week to come up with that.
It works.
I'm going to add another kind of like, not competing theory, because I love that, but it's like something which we've seen all throughout kind of like, I think like many iterations. Like I can think of other episodes like Heart of Stone, where... Kira's meant to be stuck in the stone thing, and everything, whenever they cut away and cut back, it seems to be there in the second afterwards, but in the scenes on the space station, they're not necessarily one scene after the other. So I think it's playing about with that scene, like we know doesn't happen sequentially.
We know that is what's going on, and you couldn't do it.
But I'm making it work in my head.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Yeah,
then you have to do that for all those episodes.
It would completely ruin the pacing of the episode if we had a solid 20 minutes of Dukat and Wynn without seeing anyone else. So absolutely, but I wanted to bring it up, so there we go.
Yep.
The Founder then. We actually see the Founder start to lose her cool because we get these Cardassian civilians start to fight back, and she actually loses a temper with Wayoon and grabs him by the throat, and it's the first time we've seen her. The Cardassian guy.
Well, I'd even throw in that he's the most sycophantic, loyal one. He's the one who hasn't questioned
anything. He is, yeah, he's rubbish.
The other Cardassians have.
Well, obviously when they've had to replace Damar, she's gone, "Wayoon, go find me a fawning Cardassian that will do anything I say without question. They won't question you. They won't question anybody. They will just do whatever I say."
Do you think on some level she regrets that here? Because at least Dukat and Damar had a brain and actually contributed something, whereas this guy just stands there doing nothing, you know?
Actually, I'll throw something in here because what I said earlier about the brain, I think maybe... I don't think the Founders are good tactician. I think they are they've always been in a position of strength, which has made them not had to think tactically, because they can always just go, right, just send more stuff. That's the solution. So now they're in a position where they would have to, and she just loses shit because she doesn't know how to deal with it. And like you say, she hasn't surrounded herself by with clever people apart from Abrina, the only really clever tactical people in the room. That's probably the other reason why they have a longer honeymoon period, because they've got tactics she just doesn't have. I think she really knows that.
Where the Varta are diplomats, they're not technicians. Yeah. They just do whatever the founders say, unquestioning. Founder says do something, to do it. Founder tells them to kill themselves to do it, unquestioning.
Yeah.
The Jem'Hadar are bred to follow orders. Great in a battle, they go kill all them ships. Great, let's do it. But they can't plan the battle. Suddenly, with what they've got, the Dominion, the Vorta and the Jem'Hadar, the strength in numbers hasn't worked. Something else. And what? They've gone to Cardassians first, who are conniving and sneaky and backstabbing and really political with things. And that hasn't worked out. And now she's gone to the Breen, who are tactical soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even say it's like it goes to what she does next. The next thing she does is all the Kardashians round up and kill. And she sends everyone to go and do that because she's never had a concept of, if you send everyone out there, you can't just go, oh, well, magic up more people to, like, because that's what she's used to. So I think that's more in her thinking. It's just she's never had to think, yes, and she could run out of people. She's never had to think in that way.
And she's not used to having an insurrection on her own doorstep. Presumably, once the founders took control in the Gamma Quadrant, that was it. They've not had... Or if there has been pushback, it's been on a planet that's miles away, and they've said...
Which is that Bashir stayed on?
The Quickening episode. Yeah, the Quickening.
I don't know which point, but
the Quickening.
The Quickening was the name of the disease.
Right. He stayed there to try and cure it.
Yeah, but that was the founders had done it because they'd had a bit of a rebellion and they'd been stuck there for 200 years.
Oh, yeah.
But that was obviously way after the Dominion was founded.
But that's it. It's hands off. It's like, right, they've started a thing, inject them all with a disease. She's not used to being on the ground level. You are on a planet and you are literally surrounded by these people. And she doesn't realize that everything she's doing is making it worse. Right, start bombing the cities, start killing the civilians. Yeah. That's not going to stop them now because they've got nothing to lose.
I don't believe that there have been times before where she has just lost her shit and goes like, right, run them up and kill them all. And she's just been able to do that, no problem.
Exactly,
whatever else. Just fill it up with our people. That's great. And she just doesn't have that ability now. But she
that's it. They've lost the cloning yards and everything, haven't they? So she hasn't got this constant flow of water and Jem'Hadar
coming in. So back with the resistance then. We speculated before whether Mila is Garak's mum or not. We know she is in the Andrew Robinson's book. But she so is, because here she's making sandwiches for him and saying, make sure you take your sandwiches to your insurrection.
Cross for you.
You haven't eaten properly. Have something to eat, son.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this good-looking Damar. He's eating all his. That's how he's so good-looking. You can be as good-looking as him if you eat all your sandwich and your crusts.
This is why I want to get onto it's Damar flirting with her, because there's this one, like, you get this, like, this lovely little scene. It's like she goes like, I'm too old for him, and he grabs a plate to grab a little crumb and goes, nonsense, and she goes, politicians. But then she holds the look for a while as if to say,
like, look,
I know 99.9% that you're joking, just for that, like, 0.1%. If you are into it, though, I will rail you. Just so you know, like, she's holding it just in case.
I like this entire scene between Garak, Damar, and Mila. This Kira just sat in the background, and you can see her just grinning at the play of words between them all.
Yeah.
And she's just not like...
I love where she comes
ready
to take...
call Damar daddy at this stage, I'm telling you.
Where she comes to take Damar's plate, and he sort of goes, and he eats the last little bit of it. It's just great. And, like, this again is how good the writing in DS9 is, because this is Damar who killed Zial in cold blood, but I absolutely love him at this point. I think he's just, he's a great character, and he has become...
He's turned round.
He has. He's become the hero that they needed him to be, you know, and it's done so subtly and so slowly that you realise, oh, wait a minute, when did I start thinking Damar was awesome?
It's done over 10 episodes, which is where it works.
Yeah.
And I sort of believe the fact that even though, like, it could seem kind of hasty for him to suddenly be this kind of, like, man of the people and the way he talks to the people, it could seem rushed, but I just buy it. Like, when that guy goes up, like, and shoots the guns away and goes, like, he goes, oh, yeah, good luck, Leggett, tomorrow. And he goes, like, with you on our side, how could we fail? And it's,
yeah,
like,
that's actually
a poetic way of talking, yeah, which is so under Mob, but I believe he's grown into that. He's just...
He has. He's realised what he has to do, isn't he?
And it's like, he also thanks Kira that it'd be impossible without you. You brought us here and all that. And Garrett points out the irony that the leader of the resistance, you're now thanking for saving us.
And also a woman who, I'm pretty sure, even if not in those exact words, she has pretty much vowed to kill Damar for what he did to Zial, yes, you know.
And she's more than capable.
Oh, yes.
I think there is something which this kind of speaks to, that there's a lot of moments in history where someone just happened to be the perfect person for that moment.
The right, like, person in another right moment, place at the right time.
Yeah, in another time, they might have been like Churchill, I think, is a great example. He was the perfect person for the World War. Like, he was a perfect person in that moment. Like, now, I don't think he would be the right politician for now. In the past, before that,
it wasn't the right politician for straight after the war.
Exactly. And he had a lot of wilderness years between his premierships, like, of the country.
Yeah, it was the right person to be Prime Minister during the Second World War without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, no one's arguing that. It's just, it's kind of, it's fascinating how, for another moment, if he was born in a different time, politics wouldn't work.
And that's Damar, they realised we have to create this legend of Leggett Damar. And even if you're not up to it, you have to portray that. But in this episode, he rises to that, and he becomes that he needed to be. Mila, though, she gets killed, and they throw a bomb in, and this bomb has the world's smallest blast radius, because they all sort of stand around and go, oh, my God, and it goes off, and it just goes... And then they get thrown back. Maybe that's where the budget ran out.
Well, what you didn't see is this is another one of those cases where there's a deleted scene in this moment. And in the deleted scene, Penn and Teller appear, but they thought it just broke up the action, so they took it out.
I think it's only sabotage, because it's the factory where they're making these bombs.
Maybe.
And the Kardashians have realised they're hearing Damar. And they're realizing, hold on, they have to use these bombs against us. We've got to make them look real still and have explosives thing. So they pass the test, but let's take 99% of it out. So they just go, phew.
Also, if
you know,
zoom
like
in,
when you get standard fireworks as opposed to Chinese fireworks, you get a Chinese firework and it goes on for ages and it's bang and lights everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you buy a standard firework and it has a little bit of smoke that goes.
The other thing is, if you zoom in the screen where there's bombs on screen, it does say Acme, property of Wile E. Coyote Genius.
There we go. That would make perfect sense. Then the battle starts, and as Elliot said earlier, this is for anything, it's spectacular. TV, it's unbelievable.
There's movies coming out today that would give their right arm to have effects that looked like this on hundreds of million-dollar budgets.
Absolutely.
There's even other episodes of Star Trek where they do, you feel like they've used a few kind of like, there's loads of Galaxy Class 1s during the Next Generation, whereas this one, it's just so many different ships. Like, that's what I love. It feels different. It doesn't feel like they've copied and pasted anywhere.
There's a beautiful one shot in it, and it's when the Defiance chasing the Brain, and then two Jem'Hadar coming behind them. So they do a manoeuvre, and the camera pans, so it's looking from...
Yeah, I know which one you mean.
And you see the loop round and come round and shoot the Jem'Hadar, and it's a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
There's even one of the ships which looks like... This is way before Enterprise, obviously, but there's one of the ships looks exactly like one of the Enterprise prequel ones.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do get the feeling now you can retro think it's like they were so kind of like they needed every ship. Like they got ships off mothballs. They got kind of like retired ships out of the museums. They got every ship they could. Like, that could be one of the Enterprise,
the same model as the Enterprise and X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
And they do reuse a little bit of footage from the movies with Klingons getting killed on Klingon Bird of Prey, but it's done sparingly enough that...
Yeah. It's not like six and seven where you've got that ship blowing up. It's exactly the same. It's just a little moment.
I'm not being funny. The amount of work that they do on this battle, you could give little bits of that.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you wouldn't really notice without looking it up, which you probably would.
No. You know. But there is obviously bits of CGI in it, but there's obviously a lot of model work.
Yeah.
Which is how you can have it looking like it does. Because at that time, you could only do this with physical models.
Yeah. And the battle culminates in, again, I've said this many times, but if you're going to steal stuff, you steal from something really good. So it culminates where we get this shot. It's all going wrong. The good guys are going to lose. All of a sudden, some phaser fire comes in from off screen, and it's revealed that the Cardassians have switched sides. And it is a rip-off of the bit in Star Wars where Vader's got Luke in his sights, and all of a sudden the Millennium Falcon comes out of nowhere. But I've always said it, if you're going to steal from something, particularly when it comes to space battles, you're going to steal from Star Wars. So, and it's different enough. But the dramatic beat is very similar, but it's a great moment. The Cardassians save them.
And also, there's been a great tradition of Star Trek and Star Wars kind of like influencing.
Yeah,
I would even say, like, the original kind of series definitely influenced Star Wars. Star Wars definitely then influenced what Star Trek did afterwards. And it just so goes on, and so it should be. It's like more of a brotherhood than like some people like to make out.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, on the planet,
I was about to say, I don't think any of us are in that fight where it goes either Star Trek or Star Wars.
No, and I shouldn't say brother, it's sibling relationships.
We love
ungenerate.
We love sci-fi and sci-fi fantasy.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all good.
On the planet, then, Damar and Kira are going to be executed. And I love this little moment of comedy where Damar tries to make a big speech and you get the Jem'Hadar going, enough, final words are not permitted.
Not permitted.
But the Cardassians save them, so that's all right. So you get these...
Well, one of them shoots the Jem'Hadar and goes, that's for... what was the city that just leveled?
Whatever it is, city, Kendra City or whatever.
Lacandra.
Yeah.
And they killed two million people.
Yeah, and so you get this lovely reflection that you get on the surface. The Cardassians save the good guys, and up in space, the Cardassians save the good guys. So the Cardassians switching sides is the difference maker with it all. And the new leader, Weasley guy, gets dragged off. The founders had enough of him, but...
Now,
the reason becomes obvious because we need it for the plot. But the founder says, right, get rid of him. And they start dragging him off. And she goes, you know what? Kill all the Cardassians. Like, should we kill this one should we kill this one that we're dragging off? No. Throw him out.
No, then kill everybody. Throw him outside, then kill him.
Yeah.
Because you've got to open the back door.
Yeah, we need that back door open. So absolutely do not kill him in the corridor.
Do not kill him until you've thrown him outside.
It's like the guards in Monty Python. We'll throw him outside. We'll kill him, then throw him outside. No. Throw him outside, then kill him.
I mean, you sort of like, you could justify it as like they want them to see him being killed so they know what's going to happen to them next.
Yeah,
I think it would be vindictive enough, but you are right.
That's she really does make the order to kill them all after he's out of the room. So maybe them Jem'Hadar don't get the memo until they've chucked him out. Like, you know, they might pass people, go, oh, we've just been told to kill them all. Why don't... No. The founder told me, throw him outside. I'm not... Unless I hear it direct from her, he's going outside. but yeah. So
throw him outside and throw him to the floor.
Throw him to the floor, please. Oh, my God. Yep. Strike him very roughly. So yeah, they're ready to launch the ground attack, but they can't get in the door. And this is where Nana Visitor does my favourite thing that she does, which is laugh.
She's so funny. She laughs better than anyone else has ever laughed in the whole world.
Yeah.
I will also give you, Star Trek has a long history of putting in non-funny moments than putting a laugh after. They do in Doctor Who sometimes.
It does.
Well.
I mean, it's an attempt at gallows humour, isn't it? Like, oh, it's funny that we've done all this, but we can't get through the door.
We brought explosives, and even though Demar was part of this building and knows it inside out and how it's built and all that, he didn't know that the explosives wouldn't blow up this store.
I think that's the point, though. It's like gallows humour. You don't laugh out loud at gallows humour. It's kind of like ironic. It's like, oh, yeah, jeez. you don't give a huge belly laugh. It's not like that. That's not what that money is.
Yeah, out of them all, if I had to rank them, obviously Nana Visitor's going at the bottom because her laugh is not good. I think Demar's a little bit better. And I think Andrew Robinson has the best go at it, but even he's not thoroughly convincing in this.
You're struggling, aren't you, in this situation? It's a difficult line to act, especially when you've got a 2-week turnaround and you've had to learn other episodes as well.
Well, I'm wondering if, like, sometimes when there is a last episode, they do give a little more space so that they purposely rush other episodes to give it a bit more time to. I don't know what the shooting schedule was like on this, but Jesus Christ, it's just it is a difficult thing to sell. And like you say, she isn't the greatest at selling those moments already. And you give her an impossible task.
That's it. It's,
let's not be offensive to our Visitor because she's a great actress and a role in the whole. All this thing is brilliant.
She's phenomenal.
Just make a badass.
She is really
bad
at false laughing.
And people who are tougher, like, it's great to show them having a sense of humor, having a lighter side, but then to have her kind of doing these ridiculous giggles isn't, I don't think it suits the character really either.
It doesn't. I feel like they did it especially for me because even the first time I watched all this, I was not a fan of her fake laughing. And so I feel like this was done specially for me. It's like DS9's, you know, it meant so much to me. And they did this just for me in the last episode.
So
I'm very happy. Anyway, but wouldn't you know it, at that point, the Jem'Hadar turn up to throw the guy out and the door is open.
Convenient.
Is actually, like, we are taking the mick out of it. Apart from the ridiculousness of them just not killing him there and then, it's actually quite nicely plotted because you do get swept up in the emotion of it and you're going, okay, they're stuck, they can't get in. And then when he gets thrown out, you go, oh, of course, I remember now they were throwing him out.
And thrown him to the floor to kill him.
It is quite nicely plotted out.
If you throw in a dumb decision by the founders in when they're meant to be being clever, then it jars. Whereas here, we've shown she's making stupid decisions. She's acting rashly. So it's perfect that she would make this other mistake in that mix. You know, it works very nicely.
And sadly,
what is nice is that all of the liberators don't do a thing when the door opens until they've killed him. They let him kill him. They let the Jem'Hadar kill him first.
Yeah.
Yes. No, you can't kill any more Cardassians. After that guy, we don't like him.
Yeah. After that one, yeah, we don't like that.
He's the last one that we've
We will
give you that one. Like, you're basically doing us a favour. You're saving us a trial where we might have to be leaning on him because we've got to be seen to be healing Cardassia after the war. Whereas if you do it, done.
If there's a Cardassian trial, you're getting killed because Cardassian trials are decided before the trial.
But they're trying to birth a new Cardassian is the point. Whereas if they take care of it, they don't have it. They have to worry about it. It's like it's dead.
But sadly, he's not the last Cardassian killed because Damar meets his end during this initial rush through the doors.
I know you've got a lot to fit in, but it does feel a little tiny Susan skin of evil here. Like, just because it's
I think that's maybe the intention that it's meant to be anticlimactic in a way just happen like that.
Yeah, I think it's done quite deliberately that, Jemai got killed, but the revolution didn't end with him.
That's it.
I think the thing that they've been building is Damar become more than himself. He become the figurehead. And that's people were already talking that they'd seen him elsewhere. It got to the point where it didn't actually matter if he lived or died.
Yeah.
Because Cardassia was following him regardless because they were saying that they'd seen him places he wasn't.
Oh, I agree. I just wonder, like, you know, usually you might have given him at least like a last word, like, fuck, that's you know, something, but you don't want to slow down this pacing. I get why they didn't do it. It's just, it's interesting. It's, you know,
he's, I think, also so central, like,
and he just fades. He's just gone. He's
like that. Going on from what we know of the legend of Legate Damar, I bet if you ask Cardassians the next day how Legate Damar died, there'll be this incredible story about he went hand to hand with,
with 100 Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, and that's the
to bring him down.
That's the beauty of it. Yeah,
I think that's part of the point that he dies so easily.
Yeah,
and he's shot and he's dead, but he's a legend. So the and I think that's the point they're trying to make. That he's got beyond himself. He's now a legend in his own lifetime.
Yeah,
or his afterlife.
Just very quickly, once when I used to do LARPing, there was a friend of mine who became like absolutely huge. He was kind of like one of the biggest kind of player characters ever for everything he'd done. Got killed. There was loads of us with him. It was kind of part of a big battle. And he had like a two swords he always carried. And later on, he was kind of like back as a new character. And some people came in singing songs about his character before, like an event later. And they're going, he's single-handedly with sword in one hand, shield in the other. And it's like, A, he wasn't on his own. Like, I got killed in that battle myself, for a sake. But also, he had two swords. It's like, it was just all... It's exactly that. It just even in a game, it became a myth, you know, by people. It's kind of funny.
And then they do take the HQ then, and Garak gets his moment where he gets to kill the last Wayoon, which he takes some satisfaction in.
This may be another reason we got copyright struck, because I did put all Wayoon on video as well. If anyone of you'd like me to put that on the Retrek Facebook page, I'm quite happy to put that up for you as well. But we did catalogue all the Wayoon deaths. I
still think Worf's is the best one.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, Elliot, we didn't do this though, but if you do put clips up, can you put me doing the like the story so far, the 7 years of Deep Space Nine in 1 minute, 20 seconds?
We'd have to have a look if that's recorded.
If it's in there.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, these are videos I've got that I put onto the PowerPoint. It's why we got copyright struck. That's why I've got them.
Oh, I wasn't sure. Oh, yeah, because it deleted all the audio, didn't it? Yeah, because
they deleted it.
It only used to be that they would just delete this.
They did.
Leroy
basically, we had that much that they said, if you want to put it back up, you've got to do it yourself. So we'd have to go through the entire thing and edit it all, and yeah, it would
that's
have been.
That's not how they used to do it. It used to be just cutting section, even if you had loads of moments.
They've not been bothered with ours.
We've got loads of it on. So we were just copyright struck. Massive.
Wasn't really.
These are videos I put together.
Yeah.
That I put onto the PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, struck. No. But like, I remember on Leroy Mix, they cut it was like Swiss cheese with all kind of bits they cut.
Yeah, well.
But now I think they just go down. Like,
yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So the events play out then. So first, the founder's not going to stand down, and they ultimately agree that they'll allow Odo to beam down to talk to her or link with her. And
that
I do like
last night, didn't it?
Well, it did, yeah. And I love Garak in this scene, how he's just got the gun pointed at him, and he's just going, no, I'm absolutely not letting you link with her. Don't be, you know. And ultimately, Kira wins him over, but it the intensity, the look that he's got, I just think this is brilliant.
Garak is ready to shoot Odo here.
Yeah, he is.
And to be honest with you, let's face it, even though we know it, kind of right, like last time Odo went on the side of the founders,
it did not go well.
Yeah.
Yeah, why is everyone trusting him? Exactly. I mean, I guess we're trusting he's learned from that over the years, and I guess in the end of that, he did turn back to our side, but still.
And they do still have the upper hand. Like, if Odo had gone evil at this point, they could have just shot Odo and the founder, you know.
But then they would all be healed, so they could be in.
Well, only her would be healed.
Oh, yeah, that's
a
good point. She hadn't gone back to.
They're still holding all the cards.
You still don't think you want to risk two, like, at full strength,
changelings,
because the changelings have always said certainly that they would, it would just take one and we could bring down the earth. And they kind of demonstrated that was,
yeah. I still think the state of it here, I think that they've won,
yeah.
And ultimately, she agrees to surrender if Odo will go and cure them all. And you get this scene with Martok where he's got the blood wine.
Yes.
And Sisko and Admiral Ross decide to take the moral stand and go, I will not drink over these dead bodies. And, like, fair enough, but don't pour your wine away. Give it to Martok.
Don't stand on your high horse with Martok when earlier on in the same episode, let alone all the episodes ago when they initially made this pact, earlier on the episode they were going, so we'll still stand on Kardashian with the blood wine.
Yeah,
has everyone got the diaries? And like he's going, I will bring the finest vintage, I've got a barrel of it.
I've got the 2209.
They synced their phone, like they synced their times on their phones just to make sure they were there.
I love the fact though that Martok's like, right, well, you can fuck off. You're not shaming me into doing it, and he just starts drinking. Yeah. He don't care. And
what,
too right
as
well.
When they made the deal that the people might have died during this war.
Yeah, it does seem a bit. Oh, let's try and be all oity toity. Like, no, have a drink with Martok.
Yeah,
but I like the fact that.
I think they should have had a drink. I think it's a big letdown.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any moral high ground game.
No, I don't think there was.
You drink to the dead.
They were drinking to... Yeah, exactly. Drinking to the dead. And they also go, yeah, we have won.
Yeah, we've won for right. We've won so more people didn't die.
I think it's just them...
800, 900 million have died. But it's only Cardies.
And
we've stopped billions of other people dying.
Oh, Brian would have had a drink with Martok.
Yeah, I also argue maybe even a Susan Klingon racist, because if you think about it, the Klingons, that is their tradition.
We're not going to respect your tradition when we've just won a battle. Like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that by Ross and Sisko. I don't, yeah.
I can understand it from Ross, but not Sisko.
Yeah,
and then
Sisko.
Like, we've already established Sisko has not got a lot of morals when it comes down to it.
It's true.
I mean, I'd also like to put into evidence the next scene where, like, it's just so batshit when... It is the next scene where Ross gives the speech about, like, the end of the war and this is not, like, another war would end. Whereas, like...
Yeah.
We've already established the founders are only doing this so Odo will give them the cue. Like, they've begrudgingly stood down for Odo, not for the Federation. There is no real... sense of kind of glasnost or kind of like coming together. It's just an agreement. It is literally an agreement, not a peace in the truest form.
Yeah,
and he's acting like they're buddies now, which they're not at all. They're not going to go for a drink afterwards.
It's never established what is going to happen, but presumably...
I think the
Dominion agree not to invade the Alpha Quadrant anymore, but they've still got the Dominion out there.
Yeah, but the Federation agreed that they're going to take some founders and experiment them.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
To try and make them into weapons.
Yeah, that's Section 31. That was Section 31, wasn't it, on the slide?
It's sort of implied. I don't think it was explicitly stated, but anyway... So you get a nice scene with Garak and Bashir. I'm glad them two get a moment together in the last episode talking about the fate of Cardassia. Oh. And if you want to read more about that, check out Andrew Robinson's A Stitch in Time and the audiobook. An
absolutely amazing book.
Oh, it's brilliant. And I just like throughout there, it's like, you know, you never see Garak being this real and this raw, like he's really kind of living out his pain, and he never does that. Like
that's
such a great moment to do it, and it's like just that one scene right at the end where he really just sees the pain of his existence and of his people and the way they treat everyone.
Like he's striving to get back here, and there's nothing left of it when he finally does.
My exile is over. 800 million dead. And casualty reports still coming in.
Well, it's even funnier. It's even funny because earlier Mila says, it's like, who would have thought that those kind of like treacherous kind of qualities of yours would become laudable? But basically, they've always been celebrated traits on Cardassia. Whereas he's now realizing just you can't be that anymore and really live in this world.
Yeah. And we get a lot of goodbyes then and a lot of changes. Like, Worf becomes the Klingon ambassador. That'll never be mentioned again. just why? Why did we even bother? But I'm blaming the writers of Nemesis for that. There was no reason.
Oh, if you watch the Next Generation
that.
Film, there's a little game you can play where in each of them, see how Worf returns. Like, there's a great one in the first one where he comes in and defines kick ass, it's great.
Yeah.
He's brought aboard. There's loads of kind of reasons why he comes back. And by the end, they just go, oh, Worf, what are you doing here? And then they move away before he can.
That's the insurrection. Like, yeah, he starts having an explanation. He goes, well, I was at the so and so colony.
At least the Nemesis. You can say it was at the wedding. That makes
Nemesis is after DS9 anyway, so
yeah.
But he's the ambassador. But why, like at that?
But why is he back in Starfleet?
Why,
and not the ambassador
is he back in a dress uniform? Because he's exactly.
I mean, I'd argue maybe because he is like maybe he was given an honourable retirement in Starfleet. So
I reckon it could be because the director had never watched any Starfleet.
That's in the real world.
There was a deleted scene where he says something like diplomacy didn't suit me or something like that. But anyway, it's stupid. Yeah. But that's not this episode's problem. That's future writers' problems. So they're going to have the going away party at Vic's, and Sisko makes a big speech, which is really good. Like, there'll always be a part of us left at Deep Space. It's almost like he's talking to the audience there, really. Like, you know.
Well,
and then Vic sings his...
Before we get to the song, I just want to, can I just very quickly share just one shot? It's just so beautifully shot. And again, it's just one of those things I picked out this time. It's when you've got Sisko, when he's doing the speech, he stood next to his wife and his son, one family. He is facing his other family, his crew. And then at the end, he goes to his third family, the one where he's born from, which he didn't know until this point. It's just that shot is so well done. And I just never really noticed it today. It's just.
Oh, that's brilliant. Vic sings his song, a little bit racist towards Kira, where he's like, oh, your wrinkled nose.
I don't like this song. I think it's quite a boring song for the last episode. I don't mind quite a few of the songs that Vic does through the show, but I think this one, just slows the pace of the episode right down. It feels like it goes really.
We do the whole song, and then we do a reprise where they play the and I overuse the song. I like the song itself, but it's like, it's certainly overused.
The song, and maybe it don't need to go on quite as long.
Yeah, we didn't need the full thick number.
I might even argue that you should have cut halfway between it and then gone to the instrumental, like, which mixes in the Deep Space Nine tune and all the goodbyes.
Yeah, like, I'd have been happy with one or the other. I think when they reprise the tune and they do the flashbacks later on, I think that's the better of the two scenes. We maybe didn't need both. But we'll quickly recap what's been going on with Dukat and Wynn then. So basically, she tries to kill him, but the Power Wraiths decide to possess him, not her. Which
and make
she
him
probably,
a Kardashian again, because you want to see him being Dukat again.
Exactly, because, you know, she should have seen that coming. It's like, who's the more evil out of the two of you? It's not you, love. You're trying, but...
Yeah.
I also love the Power Wraiths going, it's like, oh, we better change him into his original face because, you know...
Yeah, get him back in the makeup. We want to see full-on evil Dukat.
It's only done for the audience, but I don't mind.
This is where Elliot's time bubble makes sense, because Sisko senses this, and then he goes, right, I'm off to Bajor. I'm going to get in a runabout, which only goes at warp 6, which takes 5 hours to get to Bajor. But he arrives mid-conversation that was started when his vision,
I think the only way you can make it make sense is that you go, yeah, the Power Wraiths are like the Prophets and the non-linear, and they put these two in a little bubble till the rest of the events all catch up. So we can have the emissary, their emissary and our emissary meet at this point at the same time.
Yeah. And the Prophets could have given Sisko the vision when he needed to see it, regardless of whether it had happened yet or not.
Yeah.
So Sisko effectively is on his way to fight Dukat before Dukat's probably even got to the fire caves. But anyway, so he probably just should have rung the police on Bajor and went, here, if you see Kai Wynn and someone who looks a bit like Gul Dukat, but not quite as Cardassian-y, just don't let him in, mate. Just boot him out.
Still got exactly the same voice.
Same voice, but
Bill... he ain't got neck ridges, but trust me, it's the cat.
I will throw out though,
do a scan and you'll tell that it's plastic surgery.
I will throw out though that, in fairness, and count through bones as we've discovered, but we won't go back into that. But I would say though that probably Sisko does know that they couldn't stop him, like only he can stop it. Like if it anywhere near, they would just got.
But yeah, the Bajoran police would have got killed if they'd have. So Sisko turns up and gets his big hero moment, and we get a nice bit of Avery Brooks ham where Dukat says, "And who is going to stop me?" And he goes, "I will." And if we're honest, Sisko gets chinned in this bit. Like, he's getting absolutely battered. Oh.
Yeah, it's like, you've got to ask yourself with this one. Like, the Power Wraiths have given Dukat all the powers. They've given him bloody rays and all sorts he can use.
Oh, yeah.
And Sisko gets absolutely fuck all.
Yeah, they should have given him something.
You see, this is my theory on this, though, is that Dukat needs all those bells and whistles. Like, they're evil. They think that power is the way you win. Whereas, like, it's right. Like, Sisko's just rightness is, like, he wins by being pure of heart. Like, he wins by just like, sacrificing his own life is the way he
that's
wins.
That's it, yeah. That's
given
the
any
way
undue powers.
And Kai Wynn kind of gets a redemptive moment, but is it redemptive or is it just, I backed the wrong horse?
Yeah, I think it's totally that. She just goes.
I think it's 100% I backed the wrong horse. Oh, shit. He's my trying to poison him and taking the Power Wraith's power for myself hasn't worked out. He's got the power. Oh, I can't have this. I have to be the most powerful person on Bajor. Emissary, help.
Yeah,
and she even gets to cut calling her, what's the term?
Eminence.
Eminence. And it's like, she's already kind of rejected that by being with the Parvays, but she still wants the title. That tells you everything.
Maybe she's the Parvays Kai at this point.
Well, I thought about that, but that's never said. So it's like, it's basically, no, I think her just wanting to get rid of the kind of turn her back on it, but also keep the title.
Yeah.
Hers is all about having the power.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so, yes.
But ultimately,
ultimately she has no power and she doesn't really redeem herself. And Cisco manages to defeat Dekat, but Dekat at the cost of his own life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get back to the station and Cassidy and Jake are worried about Cisco, and you get Cisco's last appearance where he appears to Cassidy, and he has that great line where she says, "When will you come back?" And he says, "Well, maybe in a year, maybe yesterday." And I love that idea that because he's non-linear now, like, he might already be back, but we don't know. I really like how they play that, because it's tragic, but it's not hopelessly tragic, if that makes sense.
I mean, I think he's in a very unique position, because I do think that when he falls, that is the end of his corporeal, like his human life ends. So, like, in that sense, like his where he's heading to is in the past, not the future. Like, in his corporeal life, that's it. But of course, as a wormhole alien now, a prophet, whatever you like to call him, he can be in any time in the future as well. It's I love that duality. There's so much complexity to that.
It's really good. It's a really good ending to Cisco as a character. Then we get all the flashbacks, and this is where, notoriously, Worf's flashbacks do not feature Jadzia Dax at all.
Fuck is Jadzia?
Sorry, I've no idea.
You'll be saying he had a son.
No, he doesn't feature either.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you've got no reason not to feature him. That's hilarious. They could have easily put in a shot of Alexander. They go, nah.
Yeah, absolutely not. And you get a lot of goodbyes, like O'Brien and Bashir hug. We find out Nog got promoted.
Oh, that's
don't think this is great.
Oh, no.
We've got, seven seasons. We have Nog starts off as a petty criminal thrown in prison.
Yeah,
it's just hanging around as a teenage kid, perving on girls for 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah,
it becomes it goes to Starfleet Academy as a cadet.
Yeah,
it comes back as an ensign, and by end of it, he's a lieutenant. Now we have another series that's running currently to DS9. And we have an ensign at the start of it who saves the ship, commands the ship, does all sorts of shit. Promoted, fuck off.
I think one of the first bits of information that Harry Kim got from the Pathfinder was about Noggy's, like, what the?
Yeah. Who?
I would also like to give a shout out to, in all these montages, you've got Quarks. And I think about 50% of Quark, like, you've got some memories of him with Odo and doing all this stuff. A lot of his are just stood at the bar while other people walk past, or they go to smash the bar and he stops them. It's because he's a good Ferengi. He thinks about the business, like, half
it
of his
is, yeah. Oh, about this making is when profit. I made loads of money. Yeah.
I love it. And it's not and really signposted, but it's there.
You get the great goodbye between Odo and Quark, which is just a brilliant scene.
It is.
To me, this is the bit where I start, the montages are great. They kind of, it's quite staring. But that's the bit where I start really welling up. It's like, it's written all over his back. It's the perfect line. And it is. In fact, I think the bit on the Changeling's planet where Odo goes, "Do you tell everyone I actually miss them, even Quark?" Like, I think that's a studio note. I think the writers, if I had to guess, I reckon that's where they want to end it, with him not saying it, because we know that it is written all over his back. It doesn't have to be said. I kind of wish they didn't say it on the planet.
Yeah, he gives him the harumph, where you go, and it's like, that is the biggest respect that Odo could pay to Quark at this moment.
I just
love it. I think it's brilliant.
It's the perfect ending to those two. I don't need them to say it.
And the goodbye with Odo and Kira is quite nice now, on the planet. Not as good as Odo and Quark.
Why have we got this goodbye?
I don't know, actually.
Right, this whole thing seems like a studio note.
No. Why have we got Odo, any goodbyes of Odo?
Oh, okay.
Odo has agreed to go back to the Link to cure the Link.
Mm.
As soon as he enters the Link, a bit like when he linked with the female changeling, he sent the cure. All
yeah, you see it.
And come out.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up because, like, he says, because he says, oh, he needs to teach them everything he's learned. We've already established that in the Link that happens in an instant. They yeah. learn everything he knows.
I think he and just it's like, wants it, to.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what it feels like because, like, you've got Sisko, it makes perfect sense. It's like, well, he has to, like, his destiny is with the world. He's yeah. got so much more to do. Whereas Odo just got to be there and going, yep, you're cured. You've got all my memories. You know why yeah. I did it. Brilliant. I'll be back to the missus. And it's like, yeah, it just doesn't really work. It feels like, she goes, you know, you could come back, but you're not going to. He goes, yeah, no, I best be off. It's like, yeah, but you could always just come and visit. Once I'm in there.
It's always been underlying with Odo that he does want to go home despite all the reasons yeah. that the bad guys and.
Well, he does say that in what's one where they think the Cardassians have killed the family.
Oh, the Dire's Cast.
Dire's Cast. And that's why he admits to Garrick, I want to go home.
Yeah, and this is the culmination of that. Like, even though he loves Kira, that's always been a stronger drive for him. And
I also say, though, I think it kind of like in Picard, they kind of back up what me and Elliot are saying by the fact that Worf says it's like someone who I trained, who I very much trust from the Great Links, a worthy man. He told me this information. Oh, so he'll pop out to tell Worf something, but he won't go with the Kira for
it. Yeah, he'll send Worf messages.
It's sort of like he's had a one-seasoner. You know, like you have a one-nighter and, like, you just want to move on afterwards and you don't want to go back and meet him again and you don't want to start texting and calling them.
Yeah, it's a bit
like that with Kira. Yeah, I've had her one season.
It's a bit harsh on Kira that he spent all of the series pursuing her and, you know, being in love with her and wanting to be with her, and that's been his goal. And then it's like, yeah, I'm off now.
Yeah, yeah. There's no reason why he can't have both. He could live with the things and come back sometimes. There's just reason.
But he doesn't. He wants to just every so often message Worf to tell him when there's problems.
Tell him something. Hey,
and Worf, like,
you know, us security blokes.
We stick
drones,
together.
Security rules.
Bros before security hosts.
That's it. And then I love the scenes back on the station. Like, one thing that's notable is that Sisko's baseball's still there.
Yeah.
Which we know what that symbolises, so that's great.
That Ian Kent's coming back.
And Kira gives Quark a bollocking, which leads Quark to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same, which I think is a brilliant final line for the show.
And I sort of feel like Kira's doing it kind of on purpose to.
Yeah.
It's a nice me,
Yeah. She's deliberately letting Quark know that she's in charge and she's got.
And also,
she's definitely doing that, but I think she's doing it. I think, she's doing it almost like a kind of like bonding friendship thing. It's like,
like been missing Odo and he used that
for you.
But
she knows he needs that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're missing Odo telling you off, so I'll tell you off today.
Yeah.
And I love the final shot as well. And it finishes with the people it should. You know, it's Jake and Kira and just Kira offering a bit of comfort to Jake as he stares out, you know, looking for his dad in the infinite cosmos. It's just a beautiful final shot to finish on and the pan back.
Well, the thing which I said when we did this the live show, it's like it's kind of funny because every other series ends with the ship going off into the distance, going to warp. It's the classic Star Trek ending. Whereas here, you can't do that. It's because stage. So you zoom out, seeing the kind of like where it is, like it's there, set in space. But
yeah, I'm just saying that's a classic ending.
I'm sure there are moments where they've ended it differently, but you know what I mean?
Endgame
ends like that.
Endgame
is going slowly towards Earth.
Okay, but it's a ship in movement.
Flying off.
Enterprise ends in the holodeck.
No, Enterprise does end with...
You see all the ships, in fact. You don't even see one ship. That really proves my point. You see, like, four Enterprises.
The actual... To give the finale of Enterprise, which we shouldn't even be mentioning in the same breath as DS9, but to give it its dues, the last 30 seconds are gorgeous, but the episode itself is... beyond awful. But no, this is a beautiful, beautiful ending, and we pan back and back and back and back until the station just becomes a memory, as the series does. I just think it's absolutely beautiful.
It is up there in top series endings.
I think so.
And I don't mean just Star Trek, I mean...
No, I would agree with you. There's a lot of TV shows I love, but there's very few that I love the ending of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And DS9 is 100% up there.
That the landed the ending on this. They did it last year with Picard. They landed the ending.
Yes, perfect. They did.
This was the bar that was set for Picard.
I mean, there's few ones which I think about, like one of my favorites is Cheers, just because it's sort of like, if you watch it, the ending is a mirror image of the beginning of it. It's like, it's the perfect web, and this kind of, it's the perfect ending. It does do so much to call back the original, the Emissary episode. And it's great. Really great.
So we'll wrap up there for this episode. Next week,
we've managed twice as long as the tent.
Absolutely, because we're not in a pub. We don't need to go get another pint. so next week...
And we don't have Troop Arrow coming up.
Discovery is starting in just over a week's time. We will start our coverage of that the Wednesday after the episode goes out.
Which we believe is April the,
I want to say 4th. So I believe it's Thursday.
What day is it Thursday? The episode's out.
It'll be next Thursday in America. Whether we'll get it a day late in the UK as we were doing previously.
Well, of course we will, because Paramount Plus hasn't sorted out how
Didn't they do it same day?
It got a bit better, I think, with Picard, because they realised we can't muck about with that because the world was talking about
that
it.
That was it. I thought the last series of Discovery was back today.
Either way, we will be covering the first episode of the final season of Discovery in 2 weeks, which means we've got 1 week to do a special episode where... we're going to be talking about what we did at the Sci-Fi Weekender, and we're lucky enough to have two people who really, really helped us out with that. And we'll get into exactly what they did next week. But Ed and Emma are joining us, as well as another friend of ours, also called Emma, who is joining us on the podcast as well.
If anyone will recall, at Christmas was asking, could she come on for an episode?
Yeah, and she was so nice.
Saw her in the weekend, and she's lovely as Emma. So
we're gonna talk a lot about the live show that we did. We've got great people coming on to give us new perspectives. So we look forward to seeing you next week. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on X. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. You can find us on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
I'm not sure what I'm starting on next. I might get back on the Impaler. I might do something else because I've got plans.
Guys, go back on the channel. Watch whole kind of like arcs on different models you've done.
You've got, exactly. Like, you can watch. Now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on with the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as we said, we're just back from the Sci-Fi Weekender, so I'm bringing the first of the interviews, which I did there, with kind permission of the artists, I have to say. And what I've done is we're just going to have, like, highlights, so we're not... I'm not taking the full thing from the Weekenders because I don't want to tread on any toes there. But this first one's Michael Trouton, and as it happened, I got video of this one. This is the only one I got on video, but it kind of cut out partway through the thing, so I've just given that chunk. I did have audio the rest, but I just thought I didn't want it to change. So you've got kind of the chunk of interview with Michael Trouton. It's about 25 minutes we got with him. It's really great. He's not only done shows like The New Statesman and everything like that, he son of Patrick Trouton, and he now plays the second Doctor on audio, and he was in an episode of Doctor Who in Capaldi's era, so lots of wonderful stuff we spoke about.
I don't want to give away any spoilers, but I think at one point he had a boil on his ass, so you can...
Two stories about his ass. I think only we caught one of them on this.
There we go, then.
And it's not like I was trying to steer him into stories about his ass.
It just kept coming up. Anyway.
The story's not his ass.
Thanks for trekking with us this time, and we will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
LLAP and drag off!